You are listening live to the program.
Brought to you by Worth Harley Davidson North. I-29 in Tiffany Springs or online at WorthHarleyDavidson.com for new and used bikes. Why the hell not? You're worth it.
Your teams, your town, your program.
Let me assert my firm belief that the only thing we have to fear is fear itself.
And so, my fellow Americans, ask not what your country can do for you. Ask what you can do for your country.
The greatest honor history can bestow is the title of peacemaker. This honor now beckons America. If we succeed, generations to come will say of us now living that we mastered our moment.
The American people await action. They didn't send us here to bicker. They ask us to rise above the merely partisan.
Our democracy must be not only the envy of the world, but the engine of our own renewal. There is nothing wrong with America that cannot be cured by what is right with America.
America's possibilities are limitless, for we possess all the qualities that this world without boundaries demands. Youth and drive, diversity and openness, an endless capacity for risk, and a gift for reinvention.
And now, a man who can finally count a president among his fellow alumni, Soren Petro.
Right you are, Kay. Right you are. Petro in the program on Sports Radio 810 WHB. We have our first, well, insert joke here, Orangeman in the White House.
Yep.
Somebody said, we finally got a Syracuse alum. I said, well, there was a guy kind of orange-ish that was already there. I mean,
you
didn't
always
have the tan.
You always say Cuse in the House. Now you can say Cuse in the White House, I guess. It's a first.
To be clear, does it count if he got a graduate degree?
Sure. Hell yeah, it does.
It does? Okay.
Yeah, I think so.
Okay, because his undergrad was at Delaware.
Yeah.
The graduate degree was at Syracuse. I'm fired up. Whatever we got, maybe we don't get a full accreditation of having a president, but we've at least got a grad president, so I'll take it.
You got a leg up on my college.
I don't know. I don't suppose George Washington went to college, did he?
There are a handful of them, I think, who didn't. But
you probably got the first like 20, don't you, or 10, or 5, or something like that.
Yeah, Washington didn't. Andrew Jackson, Martin Van Buren. Just looking at the list here, Zachary Taylor, Millard Fillmore. So I'd probably about 10 or 12.
Not sure I'd ally myself with Andrew Jackson, but
or Millard Fillmore. Or Andrew Johnson, for that matter. But Washington, I think, is okay.
Oh, there's issues with Washington.
Oh, yeah. I mean, but as far as, let's see if I can find one. So Zachary Taylor, Lincoln. Abraham Lincoln.
You know, we should probably, have already spent too long on this, to be honest with you.
How about Lincoln? Just, someone. Just.
How about those Chiefs Bills, man, coming up this weekend? Pretty fired up for it.
Good times. Well, I will tell you, it wasn't easy. It wasn't always peaceful, but today, to this point, we've had a peaceful transition of power, and that is something that we can take great pride in this country. So congratulations to Americans everywhere and to the folks who kept this process safe today. Thank you for all your service, the police, the National Guard, everybody. So far, so good here today as we transition in America. It should be we know it's been a tough year all around, a lot of issues as we go through. Hopefully we can all get better, right? Mm-hmm. All learn from our problems and get better. That's what needs to happen. Let's hope for brighter days, better days all around for the country. And, yes, our role will be to give you a little bit of release if you've had enough of that. Well, we'll do our best.
I will give you a Chiefs tie-in to Inauguration Day. A way to transition.
We were already there. Oh. We were already there.
But it's a fun stat.
Jed, odds on this being productive?
Oh, I guarantee it's going to be great.
The Chiefs made history today.
Okay.
This is the first time in their history they have been alive in the postseason on Inauguration Day.
Curtis Siebold.
Really?
Yes.
Show killer.
No, I'm gonna disagree. I think he actually pulled it off. That's a cool stat.
They've only made the postseason in two other presidential election years. They played the Raiders in the 68 AFC or AFL Western Division playoff and lost. And they lost to the Chargers in the wild card game after the 92 season. They have not been in the postseason for any other election year, so this is the first time. The closest they came, actually, there was one more. The closest they came was 2016.
They were in the postseason in 16.
Yeah, 16. This is the closest they came. They lost to the Steelers in that divisional playoff game at Arrowhead 5 days before the inauguration of Donald Trump. So the first time they've been active for a presidential inauguration day.
Okay, I see. There you go. All right, I like that. I think he pulled it off. Jed?
No, still, I think that's a turd.
Once Jed gets dug in on something, new evidence does not matter.
When you contribute so much to society, to the world, like Jed does, you can have a very strict gauge of what is and is not productive, you know?
Well, like your level of morality that you live your life by, it's 100% or it's 0%. I'm that same way with questions, I suppose. Various statistics that Curtis comes up with.
The right thing's the right thing and do it. You do it all the time. It makes it a lot easier, you know, make those difficult decisions. Oh, it's okay. No, it's not. All right, I'll take that. I'll live with that. We got a lot coming your way today. We're going to talk some Chiefs football. Chiefs and Bills here from some of the luminaries, including Sean McDermott, coming up, the head coach of the Buffalo Bills. We'll play the feud with Todd Lebo, get some Lebo sounds. Got a feeling that's going to be heavy Chiefs-Bills orientation. Might be some hoops. You think it'll be any K-State hoops?
Doubtful. Well, that was rough.
You think? Did you watch every second of it, Curtis?
I didn't watch a second of it. I was busy watching Missouri. I was watching Jeremiah Tillman turn into something that he hadn't been this year.
He looks the part, I'm telling you. He looks like an NBA player, and at times, and more often now, he is playing like an NBA player. Yeah. That is nice to see. Yeah, maybe we'll have some Mizzou sounds. From one Todd Lebo. Frank Bull to join us in the 4 o'clock hour. We'll get some Frank opinions with Frank. In the 5 o'clock hour, we'll give you the things you need to know. Bob Glauber from the New York Newsday, he's going to join us. Always a spirited conversation with Bob.
Mm-hmm. Glaubs.
B. Glaubs. So we will do all that coming up here today in the program. So, a lot of football to be discussed here in the program. We've talked before. I think it's been well documented about how Sean McDermott is a disciple of Andy Reid, right? Everyone likes to say, when Andy Reid fired you, I believe he fired him to get him out of his contract so he could go get a job. I think he did him a solid, yeah. Right? Because Andy Reid saw that it was coming to an end in Philadelphia and said, listen, I'm going to cut you loose so you can get the hell out of here because this isn't going to be good. You know, the reports we got, soon after Andy Reid came here, was that Andy Reid was really ready to walk away from the Eagles a year before, which they had been to the playoffs, and I think he saw the writing on the wall that rebuild was coming and that maybe they'd reached. And if you hear people talk about, Eitan Shander told us, Monday, was it Monday or Friday? Maybe it was Friday. Whenever
was
Doug Peterson
Friday.
Got let go, last Friday, yep. When he got let go, that, hey, Andy Reid had enough of dealing with the owner as well. Now, Andy Reid's never done anything but say great things about the ownership in Philadelphia, but Eitan Shander says, it wears on you, right? And so I thought that was interesting. McDermott let go right before that final year, and I think Andy Reid was doing him solid. I think these guys have always been tight, and Andy Reid basically got him out of the obligation of probably he had a 2-year deal or something. He's like, listen, you got to get the hell out of here. I'm going to fire you so you can go get a job. I've already called around, and, they're going to hire you in Carolina. I think that's where he went next. You're gold, but you need to get the hell out of here. I think Andy Reid did a solid to a lot of his coaches in that standpoint. But he comes from that tree, and I think there are a number of interesting things. Let's take the first couple, Jed, 1 and 2. In knowing that they come from the same spot. First of all, second games, right? When you play a team twice in 1 year, I think that is a very interesting part. Whenever it happens, it always happens in divisional rounds, and then if you see somebody again in the playoffs, and that's what we've got here. So how much do we expect there to be, you know, who has the advantage? We've talked a lot about that. I think the team that lost the first game generally has the advantage, but I think if there is a coach that neutralizes that fairly well, it's Andy Reid, because I don't think he, whether it's just, you know, the right thing to do or just his passion is coming up with new plays and new designs, and that, you know, drives him towards having a fresh game plan where other people might be like, all right, we were beating him over the top, so let's go back to beating him over the top. Or we were pounding the inside game with the running, let's go back to that. Or even if what they do is, well, that's how we got him, was the inside run, so let's go outside run because they'll probably overcompensate. Andy Reid seems to come at you in an entirely new way. I asked Sean McDermott if there was a certain style and how he does, you know, having been around Andy Reid, approach that second game in the same season.
No, I just think it's you look at it as experience, and there's no substitute for experience. You try and learn from every situation you're in, and like in life, right? Not try and make the same mistake twice. That's probably just the best answer I could give you. There's no, I don't really have a recipe or formula for it.
Any takeaway from that? I've got one. It's that, you know, it sounds a little bit to me like it's go correct the mistakes. Now you could simplify that and say, okay, it's the same game plan, but they're not going to run the play where so-and-so threw a pick or where so-and-so fumbled. No, I think it's much more complex than that. But, you know, he said, just don't make the same mistakes. I do think a lot of it is like, okay, can you take away a little bit that what work they'll be back at there in that one? Like, don't make the same mistakes twice. That was kind of the only thing, if there was anything in that answer that you could grab onto.
I think it's open to that. I don't know that he stated that implicitly, but I took more of the find out what you screwed up and don't do that, right, more than the other.
Yeah, I think so as well. All right, the other thing that I think is interesting that's, you know, is a similarity between the Bills and the Chiefs is McDermott, while not being the offensive coordinator, Brian Daboll is the offensive coordinator, you know, has an Andy Reid philosophy as far as, listen, you throw to win, you run when you're winning. That's definitely where he approaches it. I asked him, I said, look, I go back to covering Marty Schottenheimer in this game where it was, we want to run the ball and we want to take away the run, right? It was all about the run. I asked McDermott if he remembers when the shift came from needing to run the ball to just needing to move the ball.
Well, I just know being in the Philadelphia organization with Andy and his philosophy, as well as leadership's philosophy, I felt like, although I wasn't in that realm at that point, was we needed to throw to win back then even, and so that's where I think Andy was ahead of the game, as well as at that point the Eagles organization, from a leadership standpoint, was ahead of the game and a mentality standpoint. So you know, he's obviously had the success he's had because he's the way he is.
Thanks, Coach.
Yep. Is that a Syracuse sweatshirt?
Yes, sir, it is.
Love it. Love it.
I didn't know you were going to leave that part off.
Yeah, I couldn't cut that off. Are you kidding me?
Sal Capaccio, who we have on from Buffalo, was on there too. And he's like, hey, you got a Syracuse shout out. Nice. Well done. Yeah, you know. Well, I honestly did not plan that, but, you know, when you only have four items of clothing, you know, 25% chance I was going to be wearing a Syracuse. 50, I got two of them, so 50% chance I was going to be wearing one of the Syracuse hoodies.
Well done.
I do like, no, well done for you. That was funny. I do like the part where he says, I came up in Philadelphia, and that was always our philosophy, throw the ball. You got to throw to win. Which got me to thinking, you know, we've kind of talked about, like, and we haven't had time to really dive into it, so maybe we'll do it right now. What is Andy Reid's? Where is he right now? Where will he be if he wins a championship or if he just gets to another Super Bowl? What does that make him? Because, I mean, this is where you hear the coaching tree. McDermott quotes a lot of Andy Reid stuff, right? There's clearly a lot of things that he learned from Andy Reid that he is employing right now when it comes to his football team, even though that's the other side of the ball from where he came up, being on the defensive side of the ball. But he is, you know, kind of like Belichick in the sense that most defensive coaches, you know, we're going to run the ball, we're going to grind it out, And Belichick's a guy that's embraced throwing it all over the field, and has been able to, you know, play that style of football. McDermott is embracing that style of football. Pretty soon, you're going to be the moron if you don't embrace that style of the ball, right? But my point just is, when you hear that, when you hear him talking about the influence and everything, and, you know, the fact that, you know, going back, you know, that goes back now, what, 21, 22 years ago when mm-hmm. Andy Reid got started, and McDermott says that's how it always was there. So where does Andy Reid fit in terms of the offensive geniuses? Who would you call an offensive genius? You know, the names you usually hear are Bill Walsh and Don Coryell, right?
Yeah.
Who else would you put in there?
Like Mike Shanahan gets a little bit. Joe Gibbs, I think, gets some of
Joe
that.
Joe Gibbs. I give Joe Gibbs some love on that one. Yeah, there's guys like Gibbs and Vermeil are Don Coryell, you know, coaching tree guys. They go back to the Coryell approach to things.
Guys who were hired that you think, well, they brought a system. Like the Shanahan, I don't know where that's probably an offshoot of other things.
That's
Walsh.
He
worked under Seaver, who then worked under Walsh, so that's kind of an extension of that. But I say,
but wasn't he even quarterback coach before with San Francisco before he went to Denver?
I think he might have. I'm not sure. I know he was OC on the 94 Niner team under Seifert. No, he was
right, which
Raiders
was after he'd been fired by the Raiders,
yeah.
Right?
So I'm not sure what he was before he was with the Raiders.
I think before that he was quarterback coach with Elway, and before that he was a quarterback coach with the 49ers.
Yeah, I think you're right.
I might be wrong. I'm coming off the top of my head. I'm old. Who knows?
Stram?
Just winging it.
Hank Stram, offensive guy. I mean, he's an extension of
Paul Brown.
I think
Hank Stram is the most underrated offensive mind in the history of the game.
Yeah.
Right? Now, that's not to say he's the best, but he's one of the best. But I think he was ahead of Bill Walsh.
Yep. They're both Paul Brown disciples, but Stram got there, you know, more than a decade, 20 years before. Was doing that 15 to 20 years before Walsh was doing it. So, yeah, I agree with that.
Yeah, so, I mean, what is – I'm curious, what is Andy Reid's legacy right now? If it ends after this year, because that comes back to what's at stake, right? And I think there is a lot at stake. I've mentioned here, I think Aaron Rodgers has the most at stake. I mentioned Bruce Arians and Sean Payton having a lot at stake. Sean Payton more than Arians. He's out now. I think Arians has a chance to – you know, be a Super Bowl coach. I think there's a lot at stake for him. Same thing with McDermott. But, you know, I totally vehemently disagree with what Adam Schefter said on Monday. They're like, oh, there's a lot at stake for everybody. Yes, there is. But who has the most? Classic writer fashion, you know, like many writers. I don't want to corner all writers. But like my opinion is what some, you know, the next general manager tells me type of approach to things. You know, let's break it down. Who does have the most at stake? You know, now where we sit here, I think it might. I still think it's Aaron Rodgers amongst players. I do like the Brady comment that you made. Lamar Jackson obviously squandered his opportunity. Some of the names we were talking about last week. I do like the Brady side of things. A championship pretty much steals all the credit away from Belichick for what happened in New England. I still do think that's an interesting angle on it. But, you know, Andy Reid's getting up towards the top now. The second Super Bowl's big.
Yeah.
You know, it separates you. And I know he's got a second Super Bowl appearance with a different team, which puts him in the – well, Holmgren's got one win and two losses with, you know, two different teams. But, you know, the one-win club of Holmgren, who I know Andy Reid has great reverence for, and rightfully so, tremendous coach. But Holmgren, but then there's the Brian Billicks. And who was the Colts guy who won it in Super Bowl V?
Don McCafferty.
Don McCafferty, who was, what, fired like 2 years
mm-hmm,
later?
Mm-hmm.
You know, there's a couple. Yeah, Barry Switzer.
Yeah.
You know, there are a couple of the one-timer clubs that it's kind of like, eh. You know, you got to win a championship to be great. If you win a championship, are you great? I don't know that Barry Switzer's a great NFL coach, great college coach. But, like, there's quite a bit at stake here for the Andy Reid legacy. And I think the fact that Sean McDermott is facing him, another protege, also adds to the mystique of Andy Reid and what he's meant as a coach to this game.
If he wins this title, there will be five coaches since 1950 I'm discounting Halas and Lambeau, who, I mean, it's hard to judge when you were one of eight teams or one of six teams at certain times.
Be and only had to win one game to win right. the championship, one playoff game.
There will only be five coaches that have 200 wins in multiple NFL championships. Shula, Belichick, Landry, Paul Brown, Andy Reid. Wow. It's tall cotton.
Yeah. If he wins it this
year. He wins it this year.
Yeah. Yeah, that's impressive. And give me the list again.
Don Shula, Bill Belichick, Tom Landry, Andy Reid, Paul Brown in order of wins.
Yeah, so if he'd become the fourth in the Super Bowl era.
Yeah.
Which is where you had to win multiple games to actually win a championship.
Yep.
So I think that's a big part of the equation. All right, 913-3810-810. We'll hear some more from Sean McDermott coming up here in our next segment. 913-3810-810. Hear from the Andy Reid and a lot of the players made available. They expand the numbers that are available once we get to the conference championship game. You'll hear that right here. The program brought to you by our friends at Worth Harley Davidson North, 9400 Northwest Prairie View Road. Huge selection of new and pre-owned motorcycles right now at Worth. Get it today, 9400 Northwest Prairie View Road, online at WorthHarleyDavidson.com. More Chiefs talk, NFL talk, coming up next on your home of the National Football League, Sports Radio 810 WHB.
The program with Soren Petro.
You know, when you're running with Chubbs and Hunt, everybody in the Browns fans are all, that's what we do.
Weekdays from 2 to 6 on Sports Radio 810 WHB.
You listen to the program on Sports Radio 810 WHB. Soren Petro, Curtis Siebold, Jed Marshall with you as we get you ready for the Chiefs and Bills. A couple of pretty damn good games, right? A couple of old veteran quarterbacks going at it in the early game. Tom Brady versus Aaron Rodgers, that's a compelling matchup. I think it's compelling. You got a couple of coaches without Super Bowls there, right, coaching them that are fighting to get into their first one, and Bruce Arians and David LaFleur. And then Reed versus a protege. What did I say?
You said that you thought it was
the
former
tight end
from the Cowboys drafted foolishly the year that the Chiefs got Tony Gonzalez.
They wanted Tony Gonzalez. They settled for David LaFleur. This is Matt LaFleur?
Yeah, Matt LaFleur.
Okay, whatever. Good enough in the ballpark. and then with the Chiefs, you got the Andy Reid versus protege, and then the two young stud quarterbacks, Josh Allen trying to elbow his way in there. Just a great matchup of football for this weekend. Lambeau Field and Arrowhead Stadium as the backdrops.
Yeah, I mean, the Arrowhead, the first facility to host back-to-back-to-back conference championship games. Philly got theirs split up.
Oh, three. Really, with the new stadium?
Yep, they played the first one of those three in a row was at Veterans Stadium, and they played at the Link the next two. So Arrowhead, the only stadium to host three consecutive conference or NFL championship games.
I like it. I did not realize that. Wow, good call. Nice call, Curtis.
Nice call. Good call.
I think it is. I think it is a good call. All right, 913-3810-810. I know Farmer Fred wants to join in the conversation. You're in the program, Fred. What's going on?
Oh, I just want to talk about Patrick Mahomes. What kind of stupid call was that on that sweep when he's already limping on one foot? I mean, is this play hopefully going to get filed away with the quarterback sneaks? I mean, the young man is the best one I've ever seen.
Did you call it a stupid play when he scored a touchdown on it?
No, but in that situation, it would have. He can throw for that yardage.
Well, he could have thrown for the Super.
Does anybody else do that in the league? Is any quarterbacks running those sweeps?
Have you seen the Ravens?
Well,
have you seen the Buffalo Bills?
Because he can't throw.
Have you seen Josh Allen?
He gets pressured. He comes out of the pocket. He doesn't.
No, Josh Allen. They run Josh. They run Josh Allen all the time. They run Josh Allen all the time. I think.
And he's never going to make that first 10-year contract.
Bet, maybe not. I think it's a valid point. I think the tone of the conversation, the tone of your question is ridiculous, Fred. I appreciate the call. Yes, there are quarterbacks all over the league running that. I mean, you probably only watch the Chiefs, so you don't see the other quarterbacks, but they run Josh Allen like that all the time. In fact, Josh Allen rushed for what, like 700 yards last year and like 10 touchdowns?
Mm-hmm.
Yes, there are lots of other quarterbacks that run that kind of play. Now, listen, we could say, are all of them dumb? Hey, fair question. There are lots of other plays to get that yard. Which one? You know, what play is it? What's the play when the other team knows you just want to get 1 yard? What is that play that's, you know, what name several of them, please, if there's lots of them. I mean, I think the oversimplification of sitting there in the armchair quarterback and you know, this arrogant, like, that's the dumbest thing ever. Then why aren't you making $12 million a year as an NFL head coach? Because if Andy Reid's a simpleton and he's one of the best that ever played, and you're so much smarter, why aren't you coaching it? I mean, I think there's a real question. Should you run your quarterback? I'm going to tell you, defensive coordinators will tell you yes, because it's the first question they answer every time they sit down and try to game plan for an opponent. Is the quarterback a threat to run? And if they are, it puts pressure on the team. Patrick Mahomes running the ball leaves a guy spying, leaves guys paying attention to him. That makes the patterns more open. It serves a purpose. The question is, at what risk? Again, you had no problem with it when he ran it in for a touchdown. It was the exact same play. Football is a violent game. Was Bill Belichick a moron back in, what was it, 2000 and, was it 10 or was it 9? Whatever it was, or 11. When did Brady go down with the knee injury?
08.
When he got hit by Bernard Pollard. 08.
Season opener, 08.
Was Belichick a moron for leaving Brady in the middle of the pocket so that Bernard Pollard could tear his ACL? No. Right? It's a violent game. Guys are going to get hurt. I do think this. This is how I would put it, Fred. I think that if he's not available to quarterback sneak, he should not be available to option it. Right? Now, personally, I think he should be available to sneak it. I think he's gone to the option more. He did it with Alex Smith. I think he can, and I even think just the concept of, you know, we've got to do some fancy little play that gets us the 1 yard, right, to Tyreek Hill. They've done it twice. It's worked both times. Kudos. He's in the get it right business. It's been a great play call to seal the deal against the Dolphins and to seal the deal against the Browns. Great play call. But I also think that, you know, another good play call is just to have Patrick Mahomes drop back and have five receivers in the pattern, because they're really good at getting yardage with any kind of passing play. And so I do think, Fred, to your point, we could be that maybe Andy Reid still, and I was very big on this last year when they lost to the Titans with a, you know, on a 4th-and-1, the only guy that was available for the pass was Blake Bell. And he had just come out of the game because he was hurt, and then would later miss the next two games with the injury that took him out of the game, and he was the only guy available on that pass pattern. Like, I don't think you got to just go and trick somebody so much with Patrick Mahomes. Just drop him back, let him survey the field, he'll find somebody. So, I think there's reason to be critical when your quarterback gets hurt as a play caller, and I'm sure Andy Reid is second-guessing himself and saying, okay, what else could I have done? What other plays can I come up with that we can do so that we don't have to do that again? And I think you will probably not see that till at least the Super Bowl, if at all. 9133, see
way,
it again until at least the Super Bowl, if at all.
Just to back up your Josh Allen point, in three seasons he has averaged 100 carries, 520 yards, and 8 touchdowns. So basically what Damian Williams did for the Chiefs last year with more touchdowns.
I mean, so there are plenty of, and that's part of the explosion of the offense, is that they are running the quarterbacks more, right? Now they want them to get down. In that case, I mean, you could say, hey, did Patrick Mahomes, should he have just eaten the ball and gone down, or is it just one of those fluke plays where a guy gets hurt? It is a violent physical game. I think it tends to be one of those plays that gets hurt, but I think the fact that they're running it a second time in the game already means that probably Cleveland was a little bit more ready for it. He probably should have looked for something else in the playbook. So from that standpoint, Fred, like another play call, yes. Obviously, the results justify that you had to have come up with something else. But to sit and act like Andy Reid's an idiot or it was a dumb idea, no, I disagree with that. Ted, you're in the program. What's going on?
Hey, Saran, thanks for taking the call. I wanted to talk about Andy Reid's coaching tree a little bit. You always use the phrase – he's not a moron, But it seems like some of these owners are morons in regards to the hires. I don't know if you read or heard what Lurie said about it wasn't about Carson Wentz that he went on a two-paragraph deal about saying how great Carson Wentz was when Peterson left. And then the Chargers hiring a defensive coach with that young quarterback they got out there. So I kind of want to relate that to Eric Bieniemy. What do the Chiefs think of Kafka? And with Seattle snooping around Kafka, are the Chiefs wanting Bieniemy to move on because they don't want to lose them both? Are the Chiefs in jeopardy of losing them both? Or how important, or is it any big deal that they lose both?
That's a great question, Ted, and thank you for the call. Yeah, I think it'd be a big deal to lose both, right? I don't think you mind losing Bieniemy so much when you know you've got Kafka to put in there, a guy who looks like he's on the fast track, just like all the other offensive coordinators. And, yeah, the Seahawks are said to be looking at Mike Kafka as their offensive coordinator. How about this? You know, I mentioned this the other day, and we didn't have a whole lot of time to talk about it, but what about Eric Bieniemy going someplace else as an offensive coordinator? And not because the Chiefs want him to. What about him going someplace as an offensive coordinator because it's the next thing he needs to do to you know, check off one of the reservations that owners have about him? He doesn't call plays. Go someplace where he can be the offensive coordinator and call plays, right?
Mm-hmm.
Like, Marvin Lewis had to do it after he was the reason why the Baltimore Ravens won. Marvin Lewis went on and ended up being the defensive coordinator and the associate head coach for 1 year with the Washington club. And then he got his head coaching job with the Cincinnati Bengals. Why not go, okay, you want me to call plays? I'll go call plays. Now what are you going to say? Now why am I not the guy?
Yeah, I agree that would certainly check off the box and leave nobody or nowhere else, for no more wiggle room for prospective coaches to complain about. But the question I have is on that would be, if I was Eric Bieniemy, I'm...
Why didn't Matt Nagy and Doug Peterson have to do the same thing?
It's that, isn't he going to, if he gets a head coaching job, isn't he going to hire an offensive coordinator to call the plays?
They never do. Doug Peterson called the plays in Philly. Matt Nagy called the plays in Chicago. They never do.
I was wondering if someone with their first head coaching gig, would they put that on them? I hadn't, just an idea. So you think?
Well,
you think
if that's the reservation that everybody has, then he could answer that question to owners.
He could wipe it away by doing that. No
doubt.
He
could also wipe it away by going and calling plays.
Yeah. Yeah.
And it's 100% fair. Hey, Doug Peterson and Matt Nagy didn't have to do that. True. Well, they're white, he's black, that's the reason. Well, there also weren't the documented off-the-field issues with those two. Now, there have been some rumblings about Doug Peterson since.
Mm-hmm.
You know?
And we discussed the quarterback coach thing. That's a separation.
All 15 head coaches that came up on the offensive side of the ball either played the quarterback position or have coached quarterback.
Or both.
Six instances, they've done both. So there are some chinks in the armor of Eric Bieniemy's coaching resume. It's more than good enough. It's better. It's a better resume than Anthony Lynn had when he got a head coaching job. Right?
Yeah.
I don't like that Eric Bieniemy is not getting a head coaching job. I do think that the Chiefs are running the risk of losing both of them, or at least losing Kafka. And then who's going to coach the quarterbacks? They've got a quality control coach, pass game supervisor or something that I think would probably be the guy that would load in there. Andy Reid usually has a guy locked and loaded for that next step in the staff, and he coaches those guys brilliantly. So I think the Chiefs would be in fine hands. But yeah, I mean, Eric Bieniemy deserves a job. If he doesn't deserve a job, he at least deserves an explanation. And maybe he's getting it. I think football fans everywhere, and certainly black football fans and young black coaches, deserve a public explanation for why Eric Bieniemy is not getting a job. Because I think that would serve them in being able to say, okay, it's he hadn't coached quarterbacks, I'm going to make sure I coach quarterbacks on the way up because I want to be an NFL head coach and I don't want anything. If that's what it is if you're going to be an offensive side of the ball, you had to have coached quarterbacks, okay. But to your point, Curtis, to double back to your point, You know, none of these defensive coordinators that get jobs, Robert Saleh has not coached quarterbacks.
Nope.
So, you know, but he can handle the defensive side. I mean, I think it's a cop-out. I think it's either one, he's black. Two, his interviews are a train wreck and people just don't think he's head coach material. Or three, it's his off-the-field issues he had when he was younger that people are like, that's going to blow up in our face and it's always going to be sitting there. Or it's a little bit of all those things. I'd like to think that the man has proven he's beyond his past transgressions, one of which I don't even think is a transgression. I got no problem with a guy who got in a fight after, you know, a racial slur was thrown. That one doesn't even count for me. I have no problem with that one. But the parking attendant and the different, you know, there are a couple of things that if you're an owner, you're like, hey, you know, you got to completely blow me away for me to say, okay, we're going to tolerate, we're going to live with. Like when you took Tyreek Hill, you didn't take a guy who was maybe good enough to play. Right, you took a guy that you knew could blow away the competition. Because if I'm going to take the heat for making this draft pick, there's got to be reward. Because there's risk. There needs to be big-time reward. There was. It's up to Eric Bieniemy to demonstrate to these coaches, if that's the problem, it's up to him to demonstrate that, yes, there will be big-time reward in choosing to go through the questioning that you're going to get when you hire Eric Bieniemy. Because there will be questions at that opening press conference. 913-810-810. We'll take a break. More of your calls next here in the program.
The Program with Soren Petro.
I think that's probably the weirdest voice I've ever heard in my life.
Weekdays from 2 to 6 on Sports Radio 810 WHB.
All right, wrapping up this hour. Jerry, let's get you in here. You got about 45 seconds. Go for it, buddy.
Is Dan Sorensen just actually playing out of his mind, or does he just know the system that well? Because he's always around the ball, and he seems like he's always making big plays the whole year long.
Yeah, you know what? And how huge was that play, turning the ball over? I'm tired of listening to Cleveland people whine and national people whine about the helmet. Yeah, Dan Sorensen, this is why he's on the team. Yes, he's a Bill Belichick-style player. He knows his role, does his job, knows the defense, knows where to be. Is he the most gifted athlete? No. Does he get beat sometimes by athletic tight ends? Yes. But is he around the ball and does he make big plays? And is he a guy that where he really helps is he can play so many different spots, just like Tyrann Mathieu. It enables Steve Spagnuolo to disguise the coverages and create some opportunities to make some big plays. Yes, he has been fantastic for the Kansas City Chiefs this year. No doubt.
The burnt end of the hour question. Brought to you by Joe's Kansas City Barbecue in Olathe, Leawood, and the original in the gas station at 47th and Mission.
All right, who was the first president to be inaugurated on the west front of the U.S. Capitol? Brought to you by Joe's Kansas City Barbecue.